Friday afternoon deploy carves soap figures of the Mandalorian to get away from coding. Doing it then.
We're doing it.
All right.
It's Christmas week.
Yes.
Excellent. Hopefully everyone's recovering nicely. Hopefully no one's at work today.
Well,
we are.
Yeah.
But are you exhausted from it all?
I am, man.
It's just Tyrell and I today, by the way. Yeah, the other folks.
Skeleton crew.
Everyone's on vacation. We're holding down the fort.
Yep. We got stuff to take care of. Awesome.
Weasness.
No, I'm sorry. I think I'm still a little sleepy.
I have not slept well for 2 weeks, I don't think.
Yeah.
Part of it's Christmas and part of it's unrelated, but I just keep going to bed. It's my own fault. I've been going to bed at like 1:30, and I'm
an old man.
That's bad for me.
Yeah. I can't do that. Like, that's one of those ways I know I'm old.
Yeah.
When like 9:30 hits, I'm just like, bed.
What time do your kids go to bed?
They go to bed at 7:30. No, 8 and 8:30.
8 and 8:30. Henry goes down at 8 if we're lucky.
Yeah.
That's when we usually try and do it. But he's been having a hard time with it and wanting to stay up till 9 o'clock. Lots of trips in there to get him back in his bed and stuff. Not too bad. But because of that, that's where I am, is like, it's 9:30 and it's like, okay, finally. Since 6 o'clock this morning, this is the first moment I've had to just go. And Paige and I both, we just like separate to other rooms. It's like, he's asleep. I'm going to the garage. She's like, I'm going to the sewing room. She goes and sews stuff. I go do woodwork in the garage. And that's my problem, is like, you know, 10 o'clock is a pretty typical bedtime for me. I'm old. But I've only had an hour at that point. I'm like, nope, I got more stuff to do. So I've been staying up way too late.
Yeah. We've been having to like really watch our kiddos because they've been staying up super late and eating junk, and so they start feeling bad and misbehaving,
tummy aches,
and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so we have to like detox from all the Christmas stuff.
We've been eating nothing but cured meats for like 4 days. We loaded up on cured meats for
Christmas. That's solid.
Yeah, it's good, but I'll hurt myself on that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Truthfully,
yeah,
have done it,
and they were over the sugar break this morning because they had my mother's eggnog loaf out for breakfast. I was just like, okay, cool. Glad we're back on the sugar train.
Yep. It doesn't help that we have this spread of cookies out here. We got to get rid of those.
We do. It was like when the brownies and everything hung around after the brownies, rebrand party.
We got a client GIF. Yeah, that's when it started, the rebrand party, which was before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Since then, there has just been a constant pile of sugary brownies, cookies, banana bread, something out there on the table, and it's I'm trying to get through it all. I'm doing my best, but that's causing me pain.
I don't know who made those peppermint cookies.
I think Alan brought those.
Did
I think those Alyssa made those.
Those are next level,
solid. And the Baby Yoda cookies were also
I did not get a Baby Yoda cookie.
Is there not one? There might be one left out there.
I gotta go
it's
hunt
a sugar
that down.
Cookie here.
Oh yeah, Happy Mandalorian.
I know, I'm behind.
Oh, are you?
I gotta catch up. There's a thing. I don't know how I get it. I probably, knowing how the current world of commerce works, but Verizon has a...
They include Disney Plus if
you're on their unlimited plan, which I am. But that's an introductory offer. Pretty sure I have to like cancel my phone account to get it. I'm not totally sure. You know how shit is.
I hate all that, man.
Nothing's about keeping the current customer happy.
At all.
It's about poaching a customer off of a different brand.
Yep.
Because everyone's got a cell phone now. There are no new customers to win in the cell phone space.
That's right. You just have to poach someone else's.
Yeah.
And they do not care about you. You're like, hey, I'm going to leave. Anything you can give me? And they're just like, nope.
No, but if you have any friends that are on the company that you're going to, send them our way, and we'll give them free Disney Plus and a fucking iPad and all kinds of shit. But you can beat it.
Yep. Go have fun with T-Mobile.
Because it's like, I have to wonder how that works from a business perspective at those. They must not be measuring churn. No, it's all about new customers. They're not looking at how many are dropping off, apparently.
Yeah. I'm sure they just determined that they make more with new customers than retaining old customers.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, when you threatened to leave, they would give you everything.
Yes.
Everything. I was practically given 2 free iPhone, like iPhone 4s.
Yeah.
Years ago, because I was just like, I'm out. And 18, he's like, you've been with us for 8 years. How about some iPhones? I was like, yeah, that'll work.
I'm back in.
But now they're just like, nope, I don't care.
I left AT&T shortly after that.
Okay.
And it was the opposite situation. I flipped a canoe on Lake Weddington, and there are 2 iPhone 5s, I think, at the bottom of Lake Weddington to this day, as far as, unless they've dredged it.
Yeah.
If you found one, let me know. And a wallet. And the keys to my Scion TC that I don't own anymore. All of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, flipped the canoe back over.
You lost a bounty.
I opened the dry bag that was fixed the inside. It's like, ah, it's cool. We have a dry bag. And I opened it up, and there was a pair of like $3 sunglasses and some like hand lotion in the dry bag. And I turned to the person that I had been in the canoe with, who were no longer in a relationship anymore. Not necessarily over that, but I was like, you put the lotion in the dry bag, but you just had the phones in the bottom. She was in charge of the dry bag. And so I lost 2 phones, car keys, and a wallet at the bottom of the lake. And there was a bunch of drama around that. Like, how do I get home?
Right.
But after that got sorted out, it was like, okay. So I went to AT&T and was like, here's the deal. I have been a customer for almost a decade. I'm not unhappy at all. The problem is, and this isn't your fault, I was very nice to the person. I was like, I no longer have phones. I need 2, like today. And Sprint will give me 2 free iPhones if I move to them. Now, I don't want to move to them, Mr. Right. AT&T person. I just need 2 phones today. And what you've just told me is that that's going to cost me $1,600 because I was in a contract. Right. And, you know, and this is before the phones weren't financed. I didn't owe anything for the phones. I was just locked into a contract until I upgraded or something like that. I was like, so is there anything you can do? And he was just like, no, man. And I was like, okay, because I don't want to cancel my account. But if I go over there, they pay off my old, that was the deal, was you switch, we pay off your old bill, and you get 2 free phones. I was like, again, I don't have a problem with the service. It's just, for me, it's purely about the money. And I know it's my fault, but the difference to me today is spending $200 or $1,600. And it's a pretty obvious decision. Do you want to like talk to your manager? And he was like, nope. And I was like, okay, bye. And I've been off AT&T ever since. I went to Sprint, and then I similarly flipped over to Verizon about 2 years ago, and AT&T lost me as a customer, and not because I dislike the service, which is just fucked up.
It is.
If you ask me.
It's all about, like, it seems like the way that things continue to go with subscriptions and trickling money out of you and different things, like, you have to shift everything. They just default to taking all your money, and they'll just be like, how about we take a little more now? You all right with that? Okay, cool. Just keep taking money.
Yep. That's an extra $7 a month forever.
Yep.
And man, people go for it.
And then unless you call them and you're just like, hey, you charged me $7 extra a month. They're like, oh yeah. Yeah, we'll stop. Sorry,
you saw that. Oh.
Oh, yeah. We totally meant to do that, but we didn't know you'd notice.
Yeah.
Sorry. You caught us.
Actually, we're going to send you a free Roku for being the 10th person to actually read your bill.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And then that comes with a $5 a month Roku fee. It's got a cellular modem in it that you don't need.
Exactly.
I think that's our topic today, is customer service.
Yeah.
Or dealing with customers.
Dealing with
and
customers.
Hopefully doing a better job than a major telecom company.
Yeah.
That's the goal, at least. It's a low bar. Yeah. But it's,
there's nothing complicated about it.
We can beat them, folks. Tyrell, you and I were having a conversation, yesterday as we were wrapping up our day and we were talking about, we weren't explicitly talking about customer service, but we were talking about dealing with clients, and all the challenges with that. So this applies to, you know, if you work in a services business like us, if you work in, you know, consulting, or if you're a freelancer, a contractor, you've got clients to deal with. And if you work in a product company, you don't have the same type of relationship with your stakeholders. Your stakeholders may be internal rather than external, but you have the same challenges.
Yes, absolutely.
I would say.
That was what was surprising to me was when I switched over to...
Because you came from product.
Agency work.
Yeah.
Yeah, from product work. Was that, I have the same relationship struggles with clients that I had with stakeholders.
Yeah.
Like I thought the relationship, and it is a little different for sure, but it's very comparable. And the leverage is the same, the needs are the same, the weird requests are the same, all of it.
It all comes down to what is the classic, I don't know if you've ever seen the diagram of the project management triangle.
I don't think so.
So there's three forces at play. I'm making a triangle with my hands that the listeners can't see.
I appreciate it though.
Yeah, but at each vertex of this triangle, there's a different, and each one is linked to the other two, and that is time, quality, and shit. What's the third one?
Expense.
Yes, cost. Yeah, cost. Right. And so it's, you know, there's an interplay between doing it well, doing the right thing, and doing it fast or cheap. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's a constant balance there, and stakeholders almost universally want it done fast and correctly, but doing it well is the thing that they don't ask for it up front, but they always want it the second those bugs start to appear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's kind of like you get to pick two.
Yep. Good, fast, and cheap. You get two.
Yep. You can get good and fast. It's not going to be cheap because you got to throw a lot of heads at it.
Yep.
Or you can get it fast and cheap, but it's not going to be good.
No.
Because you're going to be burning through technical debt left and right. And so you get the idea. And those three forces exist whether you're in a product company or whether you're working with external clients like we are.
Yep.
And that's a tough thing to manage. Because I spend a lot of time thinking about those three things. The clients spend no time thinking about those three things and how they interact with one another. They just want as much product as they can get as fast as possible. And obviously, they want it to be the best product ever.
Yep.
And so it falls on the teams implementing that to push back on requests that you know, imbalance that triangle. Because there's a sweet spot right in the middle. There's an ideal point. And it's very, very hard to hit. And so you're constantly trying to get things toward that ideal.
Yeah. And that requires expectation management for sure.
A ton of it.
So much.
And most of the time, that isn't really, or I would say that shouldn't be solely the job of the engineers building the product, right? I wouldn't say it's solely the developer's responsibility. Although I also wouldn't go so far as to say that the developers have no responsibility in that either. That's not very, we use Agile. So in Agile, it's the product owner or the project manager or product manager, whatever title you have for that person that's interacting between the dev team and the stakeholders. It's their job to set those expectations and to formulate that pushback, you know, to take the raw feedback and then wrap that in a bow and deliver it to the stakeholders. That's their job. But it's not... I wouldn't say it's not the dev team's responsibility also to help craft that message. And that's kind of what we were talking about yesterday. Yep. Is from the development side, you know, it's very easy to let the engineer in us go wild and be like, that's a dumb request, right? That happens all the time.
Oh, it does.
It's almost always universally the first reaction.
Yep.
Is we're striking for that balance of good, fast, cheap. And a request comes through that is obviously going to skew the balance. Like, that's really, really complicated, and they want it in a week. What a dumb request. Or, you know, that's going to break the architecture that we've built. That's going to compromise quality. So we can get that fast and cheap, but it's going to make the product not work very good. What a dumb request. And I think that's a tough skill. It's a tough skill to develop to... be able to hear a request like that and acknowledge that it's valid, right? There's something in there.
Yeah.
That's what we have to find, right?
Yeah. You have to find that common point where you can agree, like I see what you're after here, right, and I want to help you achieve that.
Exactly.
I can't just tell you no because you've asked for it in what I consider a very stupid way.
Yes, exactly.
Or a very uninformed way. It's very ignorant. Like the ignorance of clients and stakeholders is something that you have to be comfortable with.
Right.
And you can't be defensive of or offended by. And that takes some training.
And we're not talking about like just a blind ignorance,
right,
but an ignorance to product development,
correct,
of software development.
Right. Like they don't know how complicated. I mean, we've kind of referenced it like at least 5 times, I'm sure, but the XKCD where they're talking about like image taking pictures, know that you're at a state park, and it's like, oh yeah, we can do that. We'll take the GIS coordinates off the photo and have that in the afternoon. It's just like, and we need to know if there's a bird in the picture. It's just like, that's going to take 3 years.
And a research team.
Yeah. And it's just like the difference between what is easy and trivial and what is practically impossible is a very thin line.
Yeah.
And they like pushing that line. They like seeing where they can go with it. And I think that's a good thing. Like, I think that's where like even a good company leader or CEO, especially of a product company, is pushing that line, but not doing it in an abusive way. Not
right,
going all Steve Jobs, throw the phone in the tank and saying, there's bubbles, there's air in there,
I'm paying
smaller.
You for genius.
Yeah.
That's tough on the product side. And I've done so much more agency work in my career than product, but the times are with product. I think in both cases that I worked for a product company, I worked under a CEO that pushed that line in an unhealthy way.
Oh, for sure.
I've never actually worked in a product organization that there wasn't leadership that was just constantly grinding people down to nothing on the dev team.
See, I was fortunate. I've done both. Like I've been in that just like push, cook.
Right.
Get it all done.
The pressure cooker.
Working late night, working on an airplane, deploying right before demos, all that stuff. And then I've been on product companies where it's not like that. And it was like utopia. Like I was just blown away when I moved into that company. I was like, so we just kind of work on stuff. Yep. It was like, when do they tell us we have to have it? It was like, when it's done. It's like, wait, what?
What?
I'm sorry. that was a big shift. It was really good. And I enjoyed both companies. They taught me different things. But yeah, it's definitely great to not have that just drive, like cranked CEO calling and texting you and like having you do stuff last minute and overselling what the product's capabilities
that,
are.
So that was the common thread for me amongst those, and we got into this yesterday too, amongst those CEOs that I worked for that pushed the boundaries way too hard. The common thread between them, there were three actually, now that I think about it, I had three product companies. All three of them were the same way. And it was, the root of it was, I believe, they were constantly overselling.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying, yes, Mr. Client, Mr. Customer, it totally does the thing you just asked for, even when it didn't. Right?
Yes. Yes.
And I believe that's because they were all early stage companies. And I think it came from a lack of confidence in the product itself,
yes,
that it could be sold on its current merits. And so every time those people went into a sales meeting to pitch it, they were very eager to pitch, well, here's what it does today, but it's also going to do this, this, and this. And the client would say, well, I'd like it if it did that. And, oh, it does that too.
Yep.
Because, you know, they were constantly clamoring for sales. And that led not only to a feedback loop of just like more features faster, but also this cadence of, I've got a demo at 11:30. I want you to take everything new that's been worked on and deploy it at 11:15. Because in their mind, the product wasn't truly sellable. So give me the latest and greatest, and that's going to increase my chance
for
success.
That's as close as it can get.
Yeah. It's still not good, but it's gonna be better than not not adding more features to it.
And those people, like, and yeah, I remember sitting in a car with our CEO after the first sales meeting that I was highly involved in, I was director of technology at that point. And getting in the car after a sales meeting going, tell me how what you just told them was not lying. And I was like, I believe you are a good person and a moral person. Tell me how you did not just lie to the face of those potential customers.
Yep.
And he's just like, well, he said, can I was speaking to the potential. And in his mind, this was okay.
Yeah.
Can we make it do that? They said, can it do that? He's like, can you have it do that? I was like, yes, it's software. It can technically do anything.
Given enough time
Welcome
and money.
To the future.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, then it can do that. And I was like, but it doesn't right now. He's like,
there's a silent eventually in that sentence.
There is.
You know?
And some say, and they would argue, they being the business folks.
Business.
That there's an implicit, that implicit eventually is understood.
Right.
In the conversation.
Right.
Which I don't believe.
I think that's a lie.
I think that's a lie you tell. Like, that's a lie, I think that's a lie you tell yourself.
Yeah.
That they, oh, they understand that when I say it can.
Of course.
It might not do it like right now, but it'll do it soon. And we can have it ready for them by then. And oh, and that it's just a vicious, vicious cycle. And
I went into similar situation. It was before I was named CTO of the startup that I was a part of before I started Lofty. And our CEO got a meeting with, we were building, it was a convoluted mess. It did way too many things, but essentially it was booking software for non-medical health professionals, starting with yoga instructors, Pilates instructors, so that kind of non-medical health.
Yeah.
And then eventually it was going to roll out to nutritionists and so on and so forth. But he got the meeting of a head of, he was in Manhattan, meeting with the head of a chain of like 90 gyms in the New York City area.
Mm.
And he got this meeting, apparently.
Man. Got the meeting. He did his part.
Now, all we had was a booking platform that was peer-to-peer between a private yoga instructor and individual students. They could negotiate a session and pay for it. And that was it. And so he's meeting with this chain of gyms. And they start talking about what essentially to me sounds like a full-blown point-of-sale system for all gyms ever, right? How to integrate with – our current point-of-sale system, the ability to do individual transactions between trainers and people in the gym, which is nothing that we built. We didn't build anything like that. And and I remember he sits down at the meeting, and it turns out they both went to what's the Ivy League in New York? Columbia.
Yeah.
They both gone to Columbia. That was how they got the meeting, and they were talking about Columbia. And it was those two, and then I was senior software engineer by title. And then there was someone on the client side. I can't remember what her role was, but she was not an executive. So there was me, a lady also on the phone who was not an executive, and then the two executives who went to Columbia. And they're, oh, that's going to do this. And it was a phone call, so luckily no one could see my face.
Okay.
But I could, you could hear the tone, and I knew we had nothing. And the lady on the phone, I think, picked up on that, and she said, so how exactly are you going to do that? I forget what it was. Some specific feature that we had. We didn't even have the foundation work, much less the specific feature that they were talking about. And she said, she asked NT, my CEO, how exactly are you going to do that? And there was this long hang in the conversation where no one knew who was supposed to talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was a technical question, and I was pretty sure I was the one who needed to talk. And like, right as I start to, I'm like, as right as I start to open my mouth and make up a lie, because I felt that that was the only way out of this awkward silence, the CEO of the other company interjects her and says, he's not going to tell you that. That's his secret sauce. And then my CEO, I could hear him like laid back in his chair, like laughing. He's like, that's the secret sauce, baby. Yeah. We can't tell you that. And that conversation ended, and he called me afterwards, like, what do you think of that? And I was like, that was the most terrifying fucking thing that I've ever been through in my life. I don't ever want to be there again. I don't want to do sales, hire a sales engineer, I don't know. And it just, it was so uncomfortable. And we just totally got bailed out by the ineptitude of the other CEO, just being like, no, man, that's the secret sauce. And it was just no, we don't have shit. It's not secret sauce. Yeah. It's sauce that no one's invented.
But I've seen business folks live for that. Some of them.
Like, it was a rush. I'm getting all adrenaline-y right now talking about it.
The crazy founder I was with, he convinced me to watch Shark Tank with him all the time. Not like come to my house, but like simultaneously. And he'd be like texting me things about Shark Tank while we're watching Shark Tank together over distance. And
God.
I'm not about this life. I don't want anything to do with this. And I ended up getting moved into a more business focused side of it. And that was part of what eventually made me leave the company. It was just like, okay, so I'm all business now, and I've hired my replacement, and he's taken over the team and built more to it. And so then I was just like, so I make business decisions now, right? He's like, yep. And I was just like, here's the decision. And he's just like, nope. It's like, wait, what? I thought this is what I do now. And it was apparently not. And so I was like, well, then there's not a place for me here anymore. Time to go somewhere else.
It's those kind of CEOs are tricky, right? And I wish, I'm still not great at pushing back at things like that. Mm-hmm. It's still a skill. I think it's a skill that's never mastered. You constantly work on it. It's like your golf game. You're never pro. Yeah. Some people are, but the rest of us will never be. Yeah. And so you're constantly working on and attempting to improve that. but I do know more now.
Yeah,
I do kind of wish I could go back in some of those situations. I would do a better job. I was too green.
Yeah, you have to. That stuff only comes through terrible experience.
You have to have pain.
You have to have that through pain. It even relates to the season we're in with people around their families. Like, I guarantee you there's people who will be listening to this podcast tonight doing work.
Yeah.
While they're at their in-laws' house.
Stop working.
Or they're at their vacation home.
You're not supposed to be working right now. Yeah,
and so, because there is that, there's the two sides of the coin in our industry. There's the side where you've got the client or the stakeholder who's just driving the train. Or when you're comfortable and you enjoy your job, it's hard to put that work down because you're just literally enjoying it.
Yes.
And you can still get burnout. You can burn yourself out that
way. 100%.
I'll work on this while I watch like the new Mandalorian or whatever. And you're like doing work.
Yes.
On your time off. And I've found myself there too. And just like being able to put down the computer can be a challenge at times.
Unplugging.
Yep.
Right. Sometimes... sometimes you've got the business with it, putting a gun to your head to write code.
Calling you on your vacation. I've got some great.
Yeah. I've had plenty of those, but also like you said, sometimes you realize that you're Tyler Durden and the gun's in your hand.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're the one, pushing on that, and you can burn yourself out in the same way.
Yeah. I know I had a guy that I worked with at my last company who prided himself on never taking a day off. The company gave him so much time.
Yeah.
There was no pressure from the company to not take a day off. And he's like, I never took a day off. It's like, why? We would have to kick him out.
Yeah.
We'd have to kick him out when he was sick. Go home.
I've done that to employees.
Unlimited sick time.
You're on vacation.
Yep.
Get out of here.
Yep.
Yep. I have sent people on vacation before. Don't come back.
And he worked
at least a week.
I don't know if we ever declined any pull requests he gave during that time.
That'd be a good way to do it.
But
no, your work is invalid. This cannot be. You must rewrite this when you're back on the clock or something. That's definitely a tough one. I worked with a guy at the Democrat Gazette. They had our sick time rolled over. Mm. So you accrued so much per pay period. And he was a vet. A lot of people in the newspaper industry are that way. You go talk to people in a newspaper and you'll find probably more than half of people, their story is, I used to throw papers when I was 14, and then I came in through photography or something like that, entry level right out of high school or as an apprentice, and I've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
And he had been there for 20 years, and he worked his way into web development through being a page designer and a couple different paths in the newsroom. And having been there for that long, he never took sick days and they accrued. He had something like 260 full. He had over a half a year of sick time just accrued. And it was a trophy for him.
Mm-hmm.
He would come to work sick too. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously.
Obviously.
Right? Because he was only accruing like a day every pay period, yeah, or something like that. And so that was 260 something pay periods where he had never taken a day off. And so obviously he would come to work sick, but he was so proud of that time. And it was just like, man, I can't relate to it.
Yeah.
I can't either. I have a hard time unplugging, but I don't have that hard of a time.
Yeah. When I was at a really old school company years ago, and it was an accrual system. And the way it worked was the first 6 months you had no vacation, no time off.
Yeah.
You had 5 personal days for the year. That was sick time. That was any time.
Yeah.
And at the 6 month point, you started to accrue, and you accrued a week of vacation over the course of the last 6 months. I never felt so chained to my desk.
Oh yeah.
It was miserable. Like it produced anxiety.
Yeah.
Like just knowing that if something happened, I can't take time off.
Yeah.
I can't.
Can't. Yeah. No, and nothing I can do. Yeah.
And then finally time started accruing and I had some time off. I could do this or I could do that. And
then you don't want to squander it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like, I could take a day to do that, but shit.
Yep.
And then it worked a long time to earn that day.
And then and the optics of the company were they want our director of engineering wanted us there before everybody else and there until everybody else. He wanted the optics of my guys in the IT department are first here and last out. That's what he wanted. In the office, the warehouse workers were working all the time.
Right.
But he wanted us to be first in office, last out of office. And so we were there all the time. And I remember being at Six Flags in Dallas on vacation and having just rolled out.
Right in the shockwave.
Some new stuff. No, I was standing in line for like, I forget what ride it was. And he calls me. And he's just like, hey, the new such and such site. We'd rolled out 3 new sites. And one of them was like on a delayed rollout. And I think I had equipped them to roll out the last site on their own. Something like that.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, site's down. I was like, what? Site's down. He's like, sure. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a real shame. And he's just like, we got to have the site up. I was like, this is our least important site. It doesn't bring in any e-commerce. I'm on vacation. He's like, nah, site's got to be up. So I'm like, okay. So I pull out my phone and I'm like navigating Rackspace clumsily on my iPhone.
Yeah, standing in line.
Standing in line. And I was like, I can't. There's nothing. Everything looks good. This is DNS propagation. This isn't here because the DNS isn't pointing here, there yet. When I go to the site, it goes to the old site or it doesn't show up. I was like, that's DNS propagation.
Yeah, man.
And
have you tried being patient?
Yeah. And
or planning ahead.
Yeah. And he said, well, I can't explain that to other people. You got to fix it. I was like, you know, I can't fix DNS propagation.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing that can be done. You've ruined my vacation. And I got back to the office and went my family was fuming and justifiably so.
Right.
And when I got back, I went in the office and I was just like, okay. Hey, so that can't ever happen again. And he's just like, well, I mean, if you answer your phone, I'm gonna ask for the help. I was like, okay. I was like, fair enough, that's on me, I'll turn my phone off. He's like, well, you can't turn your phone off.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean I can't turn my phone off? Well, I gotta be able to get a hold of you. He's like, well, it's my phone. It's not even a company phone. It's my phone. I can do whatever I want with my property. He's just like, well, no, I need to be able to get a hold of you if something happens. He's like, that would have worked back in the day before we had cell phones, but we all have cell phones, and I'm sorry, but that's just the world we live in now. And I was like, no. And so we went round and round in circles. And then finally, like, I looked at him, and we were both pretty fuming mad. And I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up, and I'm going to leave your office. And we're going to pretend that this conversation never happened. because if you reference it again, I will walk out the door and never come back.
How much longer were
like,
you there?
And I said, probably 6 months.
Okay, yeah.
Probably 6 months.
You dusted off the resume after that. Yeah.
I was just like, there might be times when my phone is off, and you should just assume it ran out of battery if that happened.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm going to go work now.
Sorry, man.
Yeah.
That's the world we live in. Yeah, that's a bad one.
It was rough. I still have a good relationship with that guy. He just had such old, broken mindsets about work. And a lot of times you end up with that, with those really abusive work relationships. A lot of times that's where that comes from.
I've had that kind of experience with the being on call, essentially.
On call is one thing, but
I mean. Not being defined on call,
right?
But essentially being on call because I own a cell phone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And this is something that this goes also beyond work culture. I have this problem with individuals that I don't have a business relationship with. I hate having a cell phone. I really do.
Yeah.
I also understand it to be necessary. I run a business. I check my email all the time. It's not that I don't like the convenience. What I hate about the culture, if you will, of communication in our current era is that I pay hundreds of dollars a month to Verizon or whoever is giving me an incentive to switch to them at that time.
Right.
For what I believe is the privilege to have that cell phone, to use it as I need it, to access information when I need it, and to make phone calls if I need to make them. The rest of the world understands it differently, which is that I pay hundreds of dollars a month so that they can have the privilege of demanding an audience with me at any moment of the day, whenever they want. And if I don't answer, I'm the asshole.
Yeah.
And that drives me up a wall. Like, hey, I called you yesterday and you didn't answer. Like, yeah, I know. My phone tells me that you called. I'm aware that you called, but I didn't want to talk. And that's okay. I don't pay all this money to be like, oh, fuck, I got to answer. Yeah. You know, and that just drives me nuts. It really, really bothers me. But that's totally a thing. Like, everybody knows there are tomes of memes about screening phone calls, which is apparently a bad thing. Like, oh, I screened my call. That's fine. Like, you know, I don't know. People used to do that. You'd go to knock on someone's door and they'd be like, fuck, don't go answer it. I don't want to talk to that guy right now.
Yeah.
It used to be a lot harder to show up at someone's door. Now you can show up in someone's pocket given moment.
Yeah. Text messages are the worst at that. And I've had to read.
Do you have read receipts turned off on your text messages?
No,
I sure as hell do.
Yeah,
you don't get to know if I read your text message. That's my business.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, do it.
I haven't turned
it
off.
Don't look back. It's great.
I don't feel the pressure of the read receipt. But I used to feel like I definitely felt the pressure of, and not even the pressure of. No, I felt the pressure to reply, but I've also felt the. They're like, why haven't they replied? I've felt that burn.
Oh, yeah.
And recognized it and gone, no, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have to reply.
They don't owe me a response.
I didn't summon them like a genie.
Uh-huh.
I just texted them like, this place have good burgers?
Right. So there's that, right? And I get that. I also, though, you know, I text with our clients a lot.
Right.
Now, a lot of our clients, our customers want to text to interact. And so I might get a text that says like, I need to talk to you right away. And I'm looking at that, and that's client, you know, 4 out of 12. And I'm going, not my most important client right now. Sorry, client, but everybody, peaks and valleys, right?
Yeah.
Can't all be at the top of the mountain. And that priority shifts for us is, you know, like, who do we know has an urgent situation?
Right.
You know, like, who hadn't paid their bill, but is still texting me? Like, that kind of shit. And so I do, I mean, that's a situation where I don't want the client to see, like, this is urgent.
Understandable.
Get back to me right now. They read it. They're not calling. Why are they not calling? They know I have a problem, you know. But that's up to me. Like, I get to exercise discretion as to whether or not I really think that something's urgent.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my right, right? Yep. So I keep that turned off. And I'm very happy with that.
Yeah.
I find that to be a good thing.
That's a bold move, though, taking
the read receipts off?
No. Oh. Just taking the text messages from the clients.
Oh, yeah.
You can't
get away from it. You really can't.
Is that just how it rolls these days?
Yeah, it's weird. I tried to avoid it for a while, but I realized that this is just how people want to interact, even in a business setting. Like, people will text, like when we're doing when we're negotiating a deal, I will get contract terms over a text message. We will be negotiating the contract via text.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy. I agree. But it's just, that's how people do it, you know? Not everyone. That's not exclusively everyone. But, you know, for a long time, people would keep that in email because it's, like, discoverable. But text messages are discoverable now. It's all legally binding, too, which makes it even more complicated.
Yeah. No kidding.
Right?
And then, the business hustle folk, like that black square is just my 24/7 business machine.
Exactly.
So you can just get business whenever they want to.
And not having read receipts also is helpful, I would imagine, although it's probably still tracked. But, like... You know, I can imagine sitting in a deposition over a contract dispute and it's like, and on Thursday, you read the message that said blah, 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 blah. Oh. You know, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like it. I'm cool with people not knowing whether or not I saw the text.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also inaccurate. Just because I had the screen open when the text came up and it got tracked as read doesn't mean I actually read it. And so legitimately, maybe I didn't.
That's true.
I've had that happen where either a client or a loved one is like, hey, I saw you read my message. And I'm like, no, legit, I didn't. I did see that you text, but I was multitasking, you know.
I've never had and that's maybe why I've got read receipts on still. I've never had someone throw the, I saw you read my message.
Oh, really?
In my face.
Oh, I've had that a few times.
Oof.
Yep.
That one cuts.
Maybe I'm just around toxic people. Maybe that's what it is. You know, going back to something you brought up earlier, specifically about the person who didn't take vacation.
Yeah.
You know, we made a very intentional shift as a company this year away from what was an unlimited vacation policy.
Yep.
To a limited vacation policy.
Generous, but limited.
Thank you. Yes. A discrete, this amount of time, and it doesn't accrue and roll over.
Correct.
And
you that get was it right out the door.
You get it right out the door, but also, if you don't use it by the end of the year, it's gone. Right. That was an intentional decision as well, because we had unlimited vacation.
And nobody takes it.
Nobody took a day off, ever.
That's a trick. That's a bait and switch that is big. And I say... 90%
some people abuse you, right? Yeah, you can have as much as you want. And then it's like you can have, there's beer on tap, but there's someone standing by the beer with their arms folded going Tyrell, it's 4:15 every time you get a beer. Right. That's how some people treat an unlimited vacation policy.
Well, then some people will take advantage of it and take a month and a half of vacation time.
Yes.
They're gone all the time. But that is the rare exception. And they, and I'm not saying that people are trying to trap people by offering them unlimited vacation, but
I think some people are.
Well,
but not universal. I mean, we did it, and I don't believe that we were trying to. It was in good faith for us, but not for everyone.
We saw the negative side effect of it.
Yeah, people don't take it.
You just don't care. You just don't think about it because it's just a thing. Whereas when it's finite, you feel obligated to use at least some of it because it is a perishable resource.
Yeah.
It's like, this is something that I have that goes away if I don't use it.
And it also completely dispelled any ambiguity about the intent of the vacation policy.
Right.
So if for any reason there was someone on the, and we have a very open culture, so I don't think this was the case because we would have just had a dialogue about it. But if someone on the team were like, it's unlimited vacation, but I'm afraid to ask.
Right.
You know, by having, this is your time. You know, here are the rules for how it's applied when you use it. It takes all of the subjectivity out of it. And so there is no is it okay for me? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely okay to ask for your vacation time because if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. You know what I mean? I like that. And that's why we made that shift. I would love to go back to an unlimited policy one day if we can find a way to instill the culture that forces people to unplug.
Right. I think that would be the trick, is making sure we can get people to take their time off. Once we see people, it's going to be one of those things where once we see people responsibly taking time off of work, we can go, okay, cool, you can do that whenever you need to now.
Yes, exactly. And then maybe that's the policy.
And that's kind of what we have to watch. It's just like, hey, user, it's like,
you're off of probation.
Spend your money and we'll give you more money.
Uh-huh.
You but don't use spend that your budget. Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
we'll allocate that money elsewhere.
That's exactly how it is. So, but I've been at companies that have reverted. That was crazy.
That went to unlimited and then back?
No, that went from, it never was unlimited. That went from a handoff, beginning of the year, here's your vacation, to an accrual.
Mm.
And that, boy, that felt punitive.
Oh, I bet.
And it kind of was.
Probably.
But that's where the company wouldn't have conversations with people. They would simply enact policy to correct things. Instead of addressing an issue,
you would get a memo
with a couple people or one person. it would be like, we got to stop this because this person spends all their vacation at the beginning of the year and then they're coming to us all the time being like, I got a sick kid, but I don't have any vacation time and I cannot get a paycheck and all that stuff. It's just like, instead of dealing with that person, they're just like, we'll just change the policy.
Yeah.
And it's just
heavy handed.
No, yeah, it's no way. And everybody felt that and everyone knew why it happened. And that person left the company. Like it was
that person left, but the policy stayed like, behind.
Cool, thanks. Yeah. Now we're all burnt, and
that's why you can't. Now. That's why you can't enact policy that way,
right?
It doesn't work because like what marginal gain, right? For the output of an individual, there was that was the marginal gain. The output of one person, you did permanent damage to company culture forever.
Yep.
For everyone, forever and ever in perpetuity.
Yep.
That's a bad decision, right? Even if it's like, even if it only hurts the culture a tiny bit, it's forever.
Yep.
That is debt that you will never get out from under. And so, yeah, that's a bummer.
Mm.
So, thinking along those lines, we covered kind of two ideas here, which is pushing back on over-demanding stakeholders and organizations, and I'm trying to think if I had any like direct tips, and I don't. I mean, honestly, the reality is you have to learn to do it. You have to learn to say no.
Yeah.
I will tell you one of my favorite things.
Get good at uncomfortable conversations.
That's one of my favorite things. That is a skill set that I'm really, really getting good at it, and it's something I want to get even better at.
Yeah.
It's just like when that awkward silence comes up. You know, that uncomfortable situation, you just roll up in that like a warm, cozy blanket. And if you find a way to enjoy that, you know, man, it makes that a lot better. That works really well in sales. When you get into one of those situations where someone's arguing price or something with you and, you know, the next person to talk loses essentially in one of those situations. Yeah. And you just let that ride for 45 seconds of just tapping on the table, looking at each other. Oh man, that's it's uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah, I can see you got to chill, but it works. I mean, like it's. I'm not saying it works. It's not like a manipulation technique. It's just that it's resistance to a manipulation. People will apply pressure to you and make you uncomfortable so that you squirm and give them what they want.
Well, and that's a tool for someone who doesn't have any other leverage.
Yeah.
I apply pressure because it's all I have.
And all I can do is squeeze. I can't fix the problem myself, so I will go squeeze the people who can.
And that's especially true of this sounds like a slide on all business folks, but it's not. But non-technical business driven people that have a vision but don't have the means to do anything with it, all they have is that squeeze.
Yeah.
All they have is that pressure because they can't do it themselves. And I imagine like that's gotta feel so frustrating. I've got this vision for this thing. And like my ignorance about how to build it completely inhibits me from building and creating at the pace I want. So all I can do is squeeze the people around me.
It would be like, you know, losing your hands but having a melody that you want to play on piano or something like that, right?
So you have a bunch of people you're trying to make
just like play no piano not for you. That but I also don't know music theory, so I can't tell you
well,
to go
very true,
yeah. I can't tell you to go to the fifth and just like no, that doesn't sound right, like if I could just play the keys I would do it the way I wanted,
right? Yeah, that's a good point. That's good.
It would be frustrating for sure. And I think a big tip that I have for everyone, and this is both career and just personal advice, is learning to deal with those people is important. There is the short-term possibility of, say, you've got a squeezer in your organization and that's hard to work with. And maybe it's so toxic that legitimately the answer is, I don't want to work here, right? I've been there, right? And you have to make those decisions when they come up.
Absolutely.
But that you will never run out of people like that in the world, in business or in your personal life, I don't think, of people like that. And so not developing the skill set to push back and be okay with being uncomfortable and work through those situations is an idealist vision that you're going to find the perfect company where there's never pressure, right? Where there's never ridiculous asks or deadlines and things like that. So I think that people are better served rather than trying to find the perfect, you know, monoculture organization that is always perfect, I think you're better served by learning how to deal with people like in those situations, because they're always going to be there in some capacity.
Right.
Right. You can go, oh, I got this crazy product CEO, calls me in the middle of the night, crazy pushing deadlines, go into sales meetings, sell stuff that doesn't exist. It's on me to build it. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go start my own company. I'm telling my own story right now.
Right.
and then what happens is I now have 10 of those people. Those bosses are our clients. And so, right. you know, I thought I was trading that in for like, I'll never have to deal with that again. Well, I do. I just have to deal with it in a different way.
Right.
And so learning to deal with it is important.
Yep.
Whatever that is. Mostly being, I mean, no is a very powerful tool.
It is.
And people don't use it enough.
Yeah.
You got to justify a no. You can't just, the stakeholder can't come in and say, I want a button that when you click it, it does this, this, and that. And you go, no, that's not going to work. But you might say, no, because that doesn't fulfill the product goals. Or no, because that will take 3 years in a research team and you won't let me have any vacation. So
right.
I know we can't afford a research team or, you know, things like that. Like being able to say no, if it's just a blanket no, people will challenge it.
Right.
Like you're just telling me no because you don't want to do it.
Right. And then so that gets, and
no plus justification is important.
And engineers get a bad rap for that.
Oh, yeah.
Being the no people. Like I remember a company I worked at where the DOE would go into big business meetings, and the CTO was there, and like eventually got to a point where like the rest of the C-suite and like directors told the CTO, hey, don't bring the DOE to these meetings anymore. All he does is sit there and tell us no.
He's the no guy.
He's the no guy. We don't need a no guy.
It's like the attorneys.
Yeah.
The revenue prevention team.
But some of those no's were justified, but you can't play that card all the time. You gotta know when to play the no.
That's right.
And how to play the no.
Yeah, and again, back it up with some evidence. Because it comes from the same thing. It comes from that same ignorance that we talked about someone who is not an engineer that is pressuring an engineer to get something done for the business knows that they don't know whether or not it's difficult, right? And so if the engineers are always like, no, that's too hard, no, it won't work, there's something in the back of their minds that's like, I really don't know if I'm being lied to right now.
Right.
So it comes from that same ignorance breeds a fear that they're being misled or so on and so forth, because they know that they're in a position where they could be misled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big vulnerability. But you know, that's why being able to justify, you know, those kinds of conversations are important. And I think that the most important thing that anyone can do is, and this is a personal philosophy, but I default to empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You give people the benefit of the doubt. I mean, sometimes people will wear out that welcome and maybe you learn, you know, it's time to move on from this relationship or this business or whatever. But for the most part, when I get a crazy ask, I listen to it and I think their need is valid. They truly need something. They're asking for this because they have a problem. Now, they've presented a solution that is fucking crazy and there's no way it would work or it's a bad, bad idea, but there is a reason why they asked for it. And I'm trying to find and figure out, okay, the answer might be no, we won't do it that way, but what I'm hearing you say is this is the problem and here's a solution for that
right.
problem. But yeah, that default to empathy and believing that their needs are valid, expecting them to be ignorant of the process and knowing that it is there. That's your existence, right? As a specialist in any sort of field is, if they weren't ignorant to it and they had the perfect solution, they wouldn't be coming to you in the first place. So that is right. our role in the world as any sort of specialist, is to, know that people are going to come to us to solve the problem and not understand fully the problem they're going to solve, or they go solve it themselves if they did. So that's what I think is, you know, look for the valid need there, default to empathy. You know, there's something legit here. Let's figure out the solution to it. And then if it turns out people are just jerks, well then, people are jerks. But
sometimes people are jerks.
That's right. Any other thoughts on pushing back, unplugging? No. Do you have any tips for unplugging?
Because
that helps. If you're in that situation where you got to push back, but you're also under a tremendous amount of burnout and pressure, you're going to blow up.
Yeah.
So unplugging is the other side of that equation, keeping your mind healthy.
I find interests that don't involve computers. Mm-hmm. Because even if your interest is not, like, even if your interests on a computer are not programming, you're still on the tool that you use for work.
And it's very easy to, that's where yep. Slack's going to go it'll off. Creep, your little and, green yep. dot might be on. People yep. are going to message notifications. You.
That happened to me last week. That happened to me Friday. I peeked at Slack. I was out. I was off work until Christmas, after Christmas. Friday, I looked at Slack and saw that there was a bug.
Alan and I were going through that.
Yeah, there was a bug that I saw that I was just like, oh, man. I think that's going to be a little hairy. And I carried that in the back of my mind
all through Christmas.
And sure enough, I got into work and that bug was waiting for me.
Yeah.
I spent all day trying
on?
To
what
slay
What are you working
it.
On today?
Yesterday.
You still working on that
yesterday?
Bug?
Still working on it today.
Yeah.
And so like...
You're opening presents right. in the back of your mind. You're going like, man, I wonder if I serve it this way. Probably a configuration issue.
Yeah. It's just like you maybe not use UWSGI anymore. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, so like not being proximate to that. Yep. Is key to unplug because it will pull you in, and it's no, like that's just the way that technology works these days.
Yeah,
it's gonna pull you in if you're
there
close.
Billions of dollars have been invested on techniques to mm-hmm. pull you in.
Yep. So learn to ride a bike or run or build stuff with your hands mm-hmm. that aren't computers.
I quite like that, and this is something else that I love about building stuff with my hands. I was talking with Paige about this last night. I was mm-hmm. like, well, I finished a project.
Yeah.
Do you hear what I just said? I finished a project.
It was done.
It's done.
Done.
I put it on the shelf and now I look at it and it's a done project. Yeah. And I told Paige, because she asks all the time, I said, man, I just want to go build something. She's like, don't you build shit all day? And I'm like, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
And that's one of the big reasons why. To finish a project and it be done and there's nothing left to do and there's no there might be some maintenance, but there's no evolution. I was like, you know, in our industry, nothing's ever done. Every project ends with fuck it, we'll go do something else.
Yeah.
That's the end cycle of it. It's never like done, buttoned up, here we go. It's always just like, you know, it either dies early or it dies late in life when it's like, yeah, we got more stuff to do, but I think we're just gonna sunset that and start something new.
Or
that's the end of every project,
or continues to live and evolve.
Yeah, forever. Yeah, until it reaches that stage. It's a perpetual evolution until someone is just, our time is better spent elsewhere.
Right.
Which is, you know, in a lot of ways can be a little demoralizing.
Yeah.
That's why I like agency work over product work. Because at least in agency work, I mean, that still happens, but I, as a engineer on a product, I'm moving from product to product. I don't necessarily see a product for 5 years over that life cycle. That moves from team to team, and I get to go cut my teeth on something brand new every 3 months.
Mm.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
That helps.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, build something with your hands.
Yeah.
I highly recommend that. Also riding a bike. Go see your town or your city. You've never seen it the same way on a bike. I bet it's even better running.
It is.
The different pace. You see stuff that you would never see in a car. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's when you're running through your different spaces. You know what I mean? You're not necessarily confined to streets and stuff. That's a good way to get out of your head.
Mm-hmm. That's part of why I took to running, because I'd be stuck on something and I'd go for a run, and while I was on my run, the answer would come to me.
Because
mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just stuck in your face. It's in my own version of rubber ducking.
Yeah. Everybody knows that. Go to bed, wake up, and the problem is solved. Man, I should have gone to bed earlier. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, I solve problems in the shower all the time in the morning. It's like, oh, it comes to me, you know?
Yeah.
And so that is important. Even if you're trying to like outrun this, like, I got work to do, I can't unplug. Actually, unplugging might fix your work problem.
For sure.
So that stress of like, I can't unplug because I won't solve my problem can very much be a fallacy.
Yeah.
So unplugging is important.
Yeah.
And we deliver that message to you after the Christmas holiday, after you already fucked up and didn't unplug.
After you didn't unplug.
Yeah, that's right. Or
feel bad.
Better luck next year.
The meme, what you did was bad and you should feel bad, or I don't know.
Something along those lines. How could you?
Yeah.
All right.
We forgive you.
Yes.
As long as you go buy stuff from the store.
From the store. Did you guys announce that on the last episode? I wasn't here last week.
Yes, we did, because I bought a shirt live on air.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
We have a, you know, I can't find the link to it. I went to Teespring to see if people could just go to Teespring and search Friday Afternoon Deploy. And at the time, you couldn't. I don't know how long their search
index is. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Well, it's on the website. If you go to friday.higherlofty.com is the podcast website. And we've got a link to a merch store at the top. So you can get to it from there.
There's some good merch in there.
And also,
go buy you some with all your Christmas monies.
Our Patreon, you can always find that there. There's links as well. That's patreon.com/FridayAfternoonDeploy.
Oh, you have to be a patron to get access to the link to go buy stuff.
No, you get to it from the website. But yeah, we have a new patron, by the way.
Oh yes,
did you see that Daniel Worthy?
No, Worthy's a patron.
Worthy's a patron,
a guest and a patron.
Yes,
glad to have him
twice on the show, I believe, and we need to have him back.
Yeah, he's up at the Rev Unit these days.
Is he really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah. Good for him.
Yep, yeah. he replaced Blake.
Oh, Blake. Oh.
No, he didn't. Now we're getting into...
Is he full stack JavaScript now?
Community politics.
All right, Daniel.
I think he's all Angular.
I know you listen because you're a patron. Yep. Come hang out with us. We'll do another episode.
Yeah, we need to talk some more.
Okay.
Come on down.
We'll talk about the shift into agency work.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. He was
at
Rockfish.
Rockfish. So yeah. He was,
you know, agency work. You know it better than I do.
You do this.
Never
You've
mind.
Seen the clients.
Just come
way.
Talk to us. You get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So thanks for being a patron, Daniel. And we'll see you guys in a week. Recover from your Christmas. Stop working. Unplug. Close your laptop.
Put it down right now.
Yep. Turn your phone off. Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.higherlofty.com. That's friday.HIRELOFTY.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@higherlofty.com.